Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
Hey, it's Aaron Greger, and before we jump into this next episode of Innovation Calling, I want to make sure you know about our next live podcast recording event. June 4th, we will be recording another episode of our Women in Tech Leadership series. We're welcoming Kristen Twining of HPE, and she has an incredible story because Kristen moved up the ranks very quickly over at HPE. So she'll be here sharing her story. We're going to be talking leadership, women, how to rise. Even if you're an entrepreneur, this is a great series because it's really about having grit, paving your own path no matter where you are in life, and also some incredible networking. So June 4th, 5:30, City Central in Dallas, and head over to innovationcalling.com for those tickets. As always, thank you for listening. And here is our next episode with Julian Placino. All right, welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornra.
Today, we are so excited. We have the infamous Julian Placino of julianplacino.com. He's the founder of Pathways to Success. I'm going to knock that out. Training company and the host of your very successful podcast, Pathways to Success. Julian, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited.
I'm excited too, because I actually brought up this topic to Julian. He was working at his previous company. He's like, I'm not comfortable talking about this quite yet. But now Julian has ventured in. You've been venturing in the entrepreneurial world for a long time, but
now I actually have something that works and delivers value, and I am living my dreams.
Yes. Real quick, do you want to tell everybody what, you know, from a recruiting perspective, what's your sweet spot right now?
Yeah. So my background has been in talent acquisition for the past 12 years. I have worked both on the agency side and also the corporate side. My base has primarily been in technology. So I have a great network of technology folks, software development, and also infrastructure.
Okay. All right. So we'll get your website and all that good info at the end of it. But cool. Let's jump into...
Okay. The reason why we had you, okay, I'm like chomping off the bit here. So... I know.
I have very different polar energies. You balance each other out really good.
No, yin and yang has been described by us many of times.
Right, sure.
I wonder if people can like hear me like rocking in my seat right now. No, okay, so like, here's the deal. Back in the day, in the dot-com days, I was a recruiter in IT in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
And I was an outside agency recruiter. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, that was a very interesting time in my life. We could talk about that in a different conversation, but one of the things that my experiences recently has been about aging out in technology in general. And now I'm not picking on anybody, but I read a certain article, a certain, you know, three-lettered name tech company, which, by the way, there's quite a few.
We can say it's IBM. It's public information, right?
But there's actually others that actually have the same lawsuit similarly that's happening right now. So I told Aaron, I said, oh my God, who do we know that's in the recruiting side of the house? Because when we're looking at emerging technology, we're looking at the next generation of outside thinkers of where future of technology is going. So there is the possibility of hiring fresh talent. There is the possibility of encouraging existing talent down a certain path, et cetera. Now, I was maybe a couple glasses of wine in when I said, damn it, they're firing all the old people and bringing all the new people in, to which Aaron replied, probably not the most PC thing to say,
but it's true.
And I just recorded myself saying it. So we thought we should bring you in, and that's why we've asked you to join us, and I'm super excited.
I'm happy to share honestly from my perspectives.
So I was being nice and gentle, but exactly, you know, so my hypothesis is most of my colleagues in my old positions have actually been asked to leave, and they've been replaced by younger talent. So are you seeing this, and is it just anecdotal evidence on my part, and am I being a bitter Betty?
Is it sales? Is it, yeah, are you seeing it across different industries? But
you know, honestly, for me, I have definitely, first off, I want to make sure that I'm operating from the same baseline of definitions. What is the definition of ageism?
So I look at it as, if I can let go of an older person, or maybe not hire an older person, if I know I can get a younger talent for cheap. Is that what you would define it as?
In the context of financials and healthcare, I would define ageism as a lower overhead cost for the businesses to maintain that employee.
Mm-hmm.
And versus their output. I probably should add that. Versus their output that they're actually receiving from the business.
I have seen that at the beginning of the search, but not necessarily as a way to exit people out of the company.
Interesting. Okay.
Right? And here's the thing. I'm not speaking about any specific company right now, and I have a great relationship with all the organizations I've worked with in the past. But the fact of the matter is I have worked with hiring managers, and again, not naming anyone specific, where they were pretty clear about the particular demographic of who they wanted to hire, right? But I personally have never seen it as a mechanism to drive out an older workforce. But whenever we're hiring for a particular position, there are certain attributes that this individual needs to have, especially like in client-facing roles, when you're dealing with customers, because you become sort of the brand ambassador for the organization. And I understand it. And my recruiting process has always been very methodical and very objective. There are 7 variables that need to be in alignment in order to find the right match for any position. And it's the acronym MSLOMAC: motivation, skills, location, opportunity, money, availability, and culture. What we might be talking about is this culture question here, because there's a lot of intangibles there. And that's a real thing.
So it's interesting because we had a conversation a couple weeks ago with a guest, and they brought up, and I just thought this was an interesting perspective, specifically in sales, where they said, well, you know, I need the young and hungry. I don't want the old and, you know, established, right? They've got their relationships. Like I said, this was specifically around sales where they've got the relationships. They kind of, we got the coasting figured out a little bit. They know what they need to do to produce the income. And he said, you know, I want somebody who I know is going to hustle. So you automatically go younger, no family, no other priorities.
Yeah.
And how can a person, knowing this occurs, because I'm sure this is not the only, especially in tech, how can a person going in say, all right, I know this can occur, but I want to prove myself and show that I'm still just as good as a young and hungry. Age doesn't matter.
You can be creative and say things like, hire me, contract to hire. If I don't perform in 30 days, then let me go.
So I've heard this term fairly recently, the whole gig economy. So as these older generation or elder, more mature workforce, I'm trying to find the right term. Help me here.
Yeah.
I'm not HR, clearly, for a reason. So as you have the more tenured, workforce,
mm-hmm.
they are now just now consulting. They're hiring themselves out as basically, you know, a man for hire, if you will. Is that affecting the way their hiring practices are taking place, where now corporations will be inclined to hire a mature tenured person but not have to worry about the insurance, the cost of overhead, because they're basically 1099 now at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing more of that now? Is the gig economy really growing like I hear it is?
I think so. I mean, there's like this. I come from staffing, right? So like, to me, that's sort of a gig-ish in the sense that it's not a full-time position out of the gates. And I see increasingly, especially for agency types of organizations, the need for flex staffing. And if that's how the market is perceiving you, then that's maybe how your skill set is being valued. There's nothing wrong with that, I don't think.
Okay. So back on the hiring side,
mm-hmm.
let's say I've got a for tech.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, tech is moving at a pace that even a young 20-year-old is hard, you know, has a hard time keeping track with.
Right.
As companies are seeking these talents, and I know especially in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, one of the biggest problems tech companies have is to find talent, especially, let's say, in AR/VR. As this specific technology grows, not a lot of people are trained in this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I'm older. Let's say I've got a proven track record in a couple different languages, maybe not this one specifically. So I've kind of got that against me, and then maybe my age, you know, like how agile am I? Can I figure this out?
Mm-hmm.
Is it saying, well, I took some classes on it? Is it saying I'm interested in it? How can I get myself inserted into this company and be considered from a viable perspective?
Especially from technology perspective, results are the name of the game. I've seen so many people who did not come from a technology background create that skill set, and they started building things. They would volunteer their time. And especially when it comes to code, they have like places like GitHub, which acts like your sort of coding portfolio that you could show people. right? You could speak to another engineer through the language of your code. So build your competency.
Okay. Any other things I can do too? Like, do I have to go through those to get to the level of, I'm thinking of a certain startup. I'm just going to use Matt's company, East Edge Studios, right? Mm-hmm. So he does a lot of VR. I know he's talking about finding this talent. So let's say I'm really interested in this. Mm-hmm. I see they have a job opening. Do I have to go and say, okay, can I find like some place to code first before I apply? Like, kind of explain that process to me, because I think there's a lot of people out there who'd be interested in it, but they feel like they're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. So, I mean, as a business owner, if I'm interviewing candidates, I want what I look for are what are the needs of my business mm-hmm. and what are the results the candidate has already created.
Okay.
Right. When it comes to mission critical thing, I'm not going for potential. I'm looking for someone who can do the job.
Okay.
And that's why when I want somebody to apply, I want to make sure they have a demonstrated track record of it. That's not an ageism thing. That's just I'm hiring and I need someone who can do this job, right? Now, if you don't have that experience, the way to bridge that gap is to build a relationship with the decision maker and then get good at it.
Okay.
Right? Can you volunteer your time? Can you go work for a staffing company? Can you volunteer in a pro bono kind of way to a nonprofit organization to start building your stuff? Because one of the things that I look for in entry-level candidates is where has your code gone out into the wild?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a different thing if I'm looking at the entry-level market, right? For someone to have a CS degree versus having a CS degree and three apps in the App Store. That's what I'm looking for. Austin Kleon, author of Steal Like an Artist, he says to show your work. Well, that applies not just for artists, but for any kind of skill set. How can you tangibilize the results that you've created to make the case that you are a candidate for this role?
So, so even if it's not just purely technology, so if I'm understanding you correctly, are you saying that in this day and age, for a candidate to apply for a particular position, that there needs to be some branding of themselves that's out there in the wild, whether it be coding, like in that specific case?
Yeah.
Are you saying we now have to really look at social media as an additional component to a standard resume? Does a resume exist anymore, or is it...
Resumes still definitely exist. There's definitely a use for them. The purpose of any kind of branding, the purpose of any kind of resume is to land a meeting with the decision maker. That is the highest value event that can take place when it comes to the hiring process. Everything else is just marketing.
Oh, makes sense. So do you find yourselves, I mean, so I'm so far removed, I haven't looked for a job in a while. Knock on wood.
Yeah, sure.
So looking at like, you know, those online, you know, job board type, you know, companies, et cetera. Are they even effective anymore? Or are we still like shoving our resumes back in the day, shoving resume and it goes into the ether somewhere? Mm-hmm. Is it still networking? Is it still relationships that are getting the job, getting your jobs versus like a staffing agency or a blind online repository?
You need to have all the tools in your toolkit, right? So I oversaw talent acquisition for Bottle Rocket and an amazing tech company here in the Dallas area. I have a great relationship with them. I would have never left that company unless I found something I was more passionate about, which is entrepreneurship, right? So in 2018, we had a little over 9,000 applicants apply. We hired 60. Of those 60, half of them were internal referrals from the networks of people that we know, like, and trust. It's impossible for a one-man recruiting team to look at all 9,000 resumes.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly in this triage mode. The ones that make it on my radar are the ones that my team refers and brings in, because that shortens the process of building trust with a candidate and getting their rapport, because the trust transfers. And you all know the benefits of referrals, right? And that's still the number one way. And that's not unique to Bottle Rocket. That's every company out there that you ask.
Right.
So build your network.
So, but again, going back to the whole branding thing, though, is it something, because I've got college age nieces and nephews. Are you encouraging college kids or those that are in that coming up in their lives to create a brand for themselves now?
I think it depends, because I'm actually starting to see some people who will focus only on the branding, but not actually focus on developing their competencies. Right? It's easy. It's easy to become a content, you know, person and do all this stuff, but not be good at your job. That's the first thing that you need to do. Let the results speak for itself. Everything else is going to be supplemental. When it comes to job search, it's all about planning and execution. I see it as a sales process, right? Line up 20 potential employers, right? Then reach out, apply to all of them, reach out to all the decision makers, right? And then pitch your value.
So, okay, on that note then, how do you make yourself stand out then? I'm picking on Bottle Rocket just because you mentioned it. 9,000 applicants, 60 actual fulfilled positions. How did those other 30 that weren't referrals, how did they, did they do anything extra? Did they do a billboard like that one guy did? What was it that, did any of them do anything extra outside the standard, you know, submit your resume online, et cetera?
They, a lot of them reached out to me directly, right? And this is why I'm really big into this do work that you love thing, because not only does it translate in entrepreneurship, but the ones who are most passionate about the particular company, like that becomes genuine and authentic. For example, I will tell this guy's story. His name is Esteban Cruz. Shout out to Esteban if you're listening right now. But Esteban originally applied to me a few years ago as a web developer, right? But what was he at the time? He was a cook. He was working at a bar. He had no experience, right? So what did he do? He called and left me the most compelling voicemail with so much passion and enthusiasm that I called him back, right? And then I started learning about him. Then I learned that he was writing apps, putting them on the app store, selling them for money so he can go to school.
Wow. So he had not had a degree yet at that point?
He didn't have a degree at that point, no. So he was still going, like learning his craft, right? But because I know Bottle Rocket hires really passionate individuals, I wanted to see what kind of connection can I create for him and to see where he might go in his career. So I put him in front of our QA manager, who is now the VP of QA at the time. She saw the same thing that I did, that he's very passionate, very, very trainable, right? And then we hired him into QA, right? So he did all the testing and stuff. And while he was doing the testing, he was still building his competency, still writing code on the side. Right? Fast forward 3 years, he was one of our best web developers ever. See, it works. You just have to get good at your job.
Yeah.
Hey, other companies do not try to steal Esteban unless
Esteban's actually moved on, man. He's okay. One of my favorite stories. And that's why I loved what I did in talent acquisition. I could play a small role in people's lives and spawning potential and helping them grow, man. I mean, Bottle Rocket changed this guy's life.
So, yeah. Okay, you mentioned something that we had a previous guest tell us about. Run a Women in Technology leadership event. Mm-hmm. And one of the coaching that was provided for us from Dr. Brenda Connor, shout out, thank you so much, people are still talking about you, is women do not apply for jobs unless they feel like they check off every single bullet point, whereas men will oftentimes see that they have the potential that they can do it and they apply anyway.
Yeah.
Did you see that yourself?
I don't know if I can speak for all women, right? But I can tell you about the nature of job descriptions is that a lot of times they're like a wish list, right? I don't know if I've ever hired anyone with all of the bullet points. And I've hired hundreds of people in a multitude of different disciplines all over the country, right? So my recommendation is, yeah, still go ahead and apply. I mean, you can... Like if they're looking for like a super senior salesperson, you've got like 6 months of experience, right? But I mean, if you're pretty close, go ahead and apply. As a matter of fact, there's so many instances. I have another story, right? I'm not going to say his name, but we had a paralegal position open, right? But an attorney applied. Those are two very different mm-hmm. positions, right? But he kept pitching me and he kept talking to me and he was like, hey, can I at least meet with the team and this and that or whatever? We created an in-house legal position for this guy because of the value that he could add. Right?
Wow.
Build your competency. Get good at it. No one here is entitled to anything. Demonstrate your value and get good at your craft.
Well, I think that's such a great message.
I do too.
Because if you find a company that you are very passionate about, you believe in their mission, you could potentially create your own job there if you've got the competency, the skill sets, and the value to bring to that company, right?
Right.
Is that what you're basically telling me?
100%. And whenever I coach job seekers, I say, the second that you stop seeing yourself as a job seeker and more of a problem solver, the better off you're going to be.
Mm. You know what's interesting? I think that certain job roles lend itself to have that mentality, right? As a problem solver. Obviously, sales, that's what we do all day long. Mm-hmm. Coders, obviously, that's what they do all day long. But you don't think about accountants. Like, mm-hmm. it's not exactly the sexiest, position, but there are definitely ways that they can provide value, maybe cost savings, or they can find ways to talk with the sales ops team and say, hey, guys, mm-hmm. I can see these. I definitely hear what you're saying. I think some people in certain industries or certain professions tend to overlook our conversations because they don't mm-hmm. think it applies, but I think it absolutely applies. Would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, no, 100%. And you said accounting. Another story popped up in my head, right? One time we had an opening for it was just an accounting clerk position, right? And that kind of role gets a lot of attention. I probably got like, I don't know, maybe 300 applicants in 24 hours, right?
Wow.
And the very next day, I had a woman come up to the office and asked to speak with me. I wish I could name her name. I have a great relationship. I don't think it's going to bother her, but nevertheless, she was a controller. And she was a controller. So she on paper would have looked overqualified.
Yeah.
But I met with her in person. I engaged her personality. I felt like she'd be a great team fit. And I put her in front of our CFO at the time and we hired her. I didn't look at any of the 300 applicants that applied to the role.
This is so interesting because I feel like with tech, it's just, there's, you know, especially tech, right? This is what we talk about, innovation. There can be just this defeating thing. So as an example, if I were to put out a resume, I could put I know how to code COBOL and basic, like I do.
Mainframe stuff, CICS, that's old school.
Dinosaur.
Yeah. Damn it. Why do you have to date yourself in every single podcast, dude?
I'm real. I'm old. Now it's just like, you know, there can be that defeat of, well, I don't know these things, so am I really relevant anymore? But of course, it's all up to you of how you make yourself relevant. Like if you're really interested in these technologies, especially like blockchain, right? You can be an expert in blockchain tomorrow if you really wanted to be. That's what half the people are out there, right?
Pick
it up. I'm teasing. I'm kind of half kidding, but I'm not.
Okay. So, we're talking about how candidates can make themselves attractive to companies.
Mm-hmm.
What if you're an existing employee and, you know, automation's happening? We talk about it all the time and it's automating certain jobs kind of out into a different realm. What sense of responsibility do you think corporations have to help retrain, reskill, rehome, or release employees?
Ooh, that was good, Sia.
New hashtag.
I don't know. I think it really depends, right? The reason why a job exists is because it is the function of a business. If that function no longer exists, as a business owner, I wouldn't want someone doing it. Would you?
No.
Right.
But if you know that person's a really good worker, maybe that job went away. But at, mm-hmm. you know, at what point do you say, okay, this job is gone, but I really like Bob. What do we do with Bob? Do we try to find a different place for Bob? Do we train Bob? Or is that Bob's responsibility to say, listen, I'm doing a menial task. I probably should start training myself to figure out plan B.
I think everyone has to take responsibility for what happens for their own life, right? That being said, if you have a great relationship between employer and also employee, I would, and I have had conversations with individuals saying, hey, it looks like this position might not be needed anymore. This is what's coming down the pipeline. Here are some options for you internally. And if not, I want to set your expectations that you may need to exit from the company, but I'm happy to create connections for you to help you land somewhere else.
That's pretty awesome.
How receptive are people to that? I'm just curious.
Well, it's going to scare anyone, right?
Yeah.
But right. I mean, it's the truth. And I would be doing that person a disservice by just sugarcoating things.
Right.
But how often do you think HR, because, you know, when I left mine.
That's very progressive.
There was a lot of sugarcoating on mine. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. my God, people stop wasting my time. I'm choosing to leave. Thank you. Give me the package. Let's go.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many times HR would call me. And I'm like, OMG, I'm not crying, kids. This ain't my first rodeo. Let me go. Just let me go. Give me my money and go. But I mean, do you think more successful companies understand this and just, I guess, cut your losses, but they're much more matter of fact about it. That's where the most successful companies are.
So I think I was lucky in the sense that I worked for a smaller company, right? Where you can have a little bit more of a white glove approach with the people that you worked with. I can't say I could speak for really large corporations where this happens in mass because that removes kind of that white glove approach anyway, just because there's so many people.
Right.
I can't say I know what the answer is to that.
Okay. So I want to circle back to your training. I know mm-hmm. you work with a lot of companies and recruiting and all of that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what we talked about earlier, ageism,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, even you said sometimes in the hiring, we know it's an issue. We know there's lawsuits out there, right?
Yeah,
whether
right.
they're legit or not. How are you training companies? Is it something they ask for to say, listen, you need to make sure you're not perceived as hiring only a certain age group, you know, anything illegal? What are you training to help companies make sure that their best foot forward is in terms of this issue?
So my consulting company tailors to IT staffing companies, and I do sales training, recruiting mm-hmm. training, personal branding, and employer branding. I don't necessarily train on this particular topic.
Okay. So does it ever come up?
Not really.
Okay. I'm interested even from the recruiting perspective.
The question is, how do you perceived? As
yeah. That? Like, how do you, I mean, ages is an issue, right? Like,
right.
If, even if you're recruiting,
mm-hmm.
could it do you ever have to worry that people are like, well, they're only hiring younger people? Is that even, I mean,
Well, I think, I mean, if I think you need to evaluate your hiring strategy. I think you need to evaluate what are your real values as a company. Just because in my experience, I hired very, very top-notch engineers and also creatives. And truthfully, I don't care what you look like, what background you come from. We've even provided sponsorship. I don't care if you're young or old. If you can produce the value, results are the name of the game.
Okay.
And if anything, it adds to the diversity of the workforce with the different ideas and different perspectives.
I was going to say, I wonder if people look at priorities, like just from a, and it's just a naturally older, like, all right, you've got kids, you've got this, like, I hate to say that it exists, but 27-year-old with no family, no whatever, is going to work a lot harder for me than 45-year-old who's running around, like, let's just be a mom, like, I've got, you know, my kids are priorities. So it's like, it's, it just seems to be, it's got to happen, right? Like,
wait, in this case, you're saying the younger person is a harder worker?
Yes.
Or the assumption being they have more hours to give to work.
Yeah.
You see, I just see so many exceptions that it's hard for me to lump people into groups, right?
Right.
Like when the whole, like a lot of people say that, you know, millennials are lazy and this and that or whatever. Some of the most awesome hires I ever hired, like the Esteban Cruz, is they're incredible. It's less about the age, but more about the story of the person. Something I'm starting to realize now about top performers, right, is they went through some type of adversity that prepares them to create the work ethic to be successful at their jobs. And I was on a panel yesterday for TechServe. Like, we found the top three highest producing recruiters in Dallas, and then we shared their best practices. Each one of them had this story of adversity, of like a crisis of self-awareness. What am I going to do with my life? And then finding a real reason to push forward, right? Yeah. Same thing. What I do on my podcast, interview very successful people, learn how they became successful. It's people pursuing work that they love, that they find meaning in, and they face some type of adversity. It's less about the age and more about the story of that person.
I think there's some, I actually read an article about that. And I'm like so upset with myself because I saved it.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I saved it. I'm kind of like a squirrel where you save things and you just push it off somewhere.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So,
I'm a hoarder of information.
It is. Yeah. But it's somewhere in my computer or my head, one of the two. But that is some truth. They said that the more successful and more aggressive individuals to achieve whatever it is, and success being defined loosely,
sure,
whatever it might be, have faced adversity in their youth, in their formative years, is what they actually, the article is hypothesizing. Was the younger they were, the fact they had to face adversity and address it and move on tended to be the more successful people, because you're going to always have, you know, some kind of adversity. There's always going to be a challenge, and it's not the it's not the challenge that's going to take you out. It's how you respond to those challenges.
100%. And I got this from Austin Lewis over at Signature Consultants, and he interviews a lot of recruiters that come straight out of college. And he said his favorite question is, tell me about a time that you failed, and how did you bounce back from it, and what were the results that you were produced after that? I think that's a great question. And I want to give a shout out to Kelsey Maddie. Kelsey Maddie is one of the top performers in the staffing industry. And I think out of a group of, I think, 50 people, he's the only one that really made it out of that group. And I was really trying to analyze him because I'm obsessed with how people become top performers. And I learned about his story. This guy's been painting fences since he was 15. He had like the paper route. He had all these part-time jobs. He was hustling to support his parents. There's a story there. He built a muscle of work ethic. And I think you can find that in anyone. And I've seen old people and young people be top performers and low performers. So it's like, I'm very careful to generalize anyone.
Yeah.
Right. And it's tough because this topic is something that, in order for us to get a broader view of things, there is a little bit of stereotyping you have to make in order to make it a point. Yeah. In some ways. I'm not saying stereotype. I'm just saying generalization, not stereotype. I probably should define my words a little bit clearer.
Yeah.
So in the age of increased diversity, where businesses are touting their ability to support multiple, you know, backgrounds within their organization. Do you sense, could there potentially be a backlash of, you know, again, what's that hiring, the equal opportunity hiring, a backlash of, oh, so-and-so got hired because they fit into the mold of the criteria that's fitting the narrative of today's business world? Do you think there's a backlash of perhaps someone that might not be as qualified?
I don't think I understand the question.
So what I'm saying is in the push for diversity, do you think there could be a backlash of, oh, this person is less qualified, but they fit the bill of the diversity push?
Like an affirmative
push.
Action kind of
That's
thing?
That's the word I'm looking for.
Now we're really getting
I mean, in
maybe, I don't know.
You're not, are you
I'd
seeing
have to look
it?
At this. Am I seeing it?
From your perspective, working with corporations as you're advising, are you?
I have never seen anyone hire, and not to say it hasn't, because of a perceived image you would give the corporation. I just haven't seen that.
Okay.
I certainly have never been part of an organization for that either, right? Like every time I made a hire, it was for a purpose because he or she was the best person for the role. That's it.
And that's so, we're so happy to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, I think I love this topic. I mean, I find this just so interesting because like I said, one of our biggest reasons for starting this podcast was to connect people that hear great companies, that hear great things, and to be able to say, I want to work for that company or I want to work with that, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I feel sometimes, especially, I know as I approach 40, I'll be honest, I totally had a midlife crisis. Like I was like, I felt useless. I mean, it was like, it's ridiculous to look back on it now. Mm-hmm. It was a year, but I felt like damaged goods. Like, I'm like, can I reinvent myself? How exactly do I reinvent myself? And it was like a really weird thing. And I know I can't be the only one that went through it, but I just felt like, okay, if I wanted to go back into technology, could I ever do that? It was just a really weird, and it's just good to hear that for anybody else who went through that, who thought that way, mm-hmm. you can do, like, you're not dead in the water.
Yeah.
Like, it's totally up to you.
100%. I believe that, yeah.
So I know I led off with a whole conversation with ageism, okay? And,
yeah.
And that was only because, you know, I read that article and I was like, ooh, I'm on fire for that.
Yeah.
But do you think also, okay, guys, I'll pose this to you as well, Aaron, not just Julian, so you're not always on the spot.
Sure.
Do you think that if companies are leading towards emerging technologies or really pushing that, because it is coming out, it is driving our society today, do you think that if the more mature employees don't invest in themselves, they're going to be left by the wayside? It's not conscious. I don't think companies are consciously pushing people out, but I feel like, are we going in that direction anyway because we're not reinventing ourselves culturally and pushing ourselves to that?
Well, there's a lot of coasting happening. You can see that, right?
No, tell me about that, Aaron.
No, there's a lot of people, even you get kind of comfortable in a job. You know what you can get away with, what you can't. I mean, there's a lot of coasting that happens in corporate America. And are you, to that point, you're probably not the right person to keep employed anyway. So I'll let Julian continue that answer.
So the question is,
in the relentless
pursuit. They absolutely need to retool. I mean, if this is their discipline, if this is their craft, if there's something that they're passionate about, they're probably already keeping up with trends. But if they are one of those people that are coasting, then you might need to look at yourself in the mirror and see if you're doing what you want to do. And for me, that's why I love the path of entrepreneurship, because nobody cares how old you are, just as long as you can create value. You know, what I'm learning is surrounding myself by other amazing entrepreneurs here at City Central is that opportunities are limitless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question. I know this wasn't on the original docket, but you did it so well. You branded yourself while working for a company.
Right.
You see a lot of, like you were saying, to the point of branding, you need to be competent, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
How much does it help? Okay, let's say you're very competent. Do companies have to be careful of employees going out there and branding themselves? Like we talked about this on I won't get into security, but is there a good and bad to it? Is there only an upside as long as you're competent and doing well? Is there anything like companies were cautious of maybe when you're hiring, when you're like kind of branding yourself a little bit too much, like too much about you versus your company? Can you talk about what I know there's a lot of questions to this, so let me circle it back. But what did you do that worked really well? And was there ever a concern from your employer to say, tone it down, it's great? Or did it just work from a synergy from the beginning?
I was very lucky because I worked for an amazing company and bought a rocket. And something that they say, Calvin, he's our founder and CEO, Calvin, he says, he always talks about the importance of doing work that you love. And Bottle Rocket is a company that doesn't just say it, but they put it into practice. And once a year, they do something called Rocket Science, which is their yearly hackathon, where they allow all of us rocketeers to build whatever we want. Well, I've always loved interviewing successful people. And in March of 2016, I started the podcast, The Pathways to Success. And what I did was I didn't hide any of it. I just did it in such a public way. I included all of our Rocketeers. I had several Rocketeers in the podcast. I had Calvin in the podcast twice. I use it as a mechanism to serve Bottle Rocket because it sort of elevated my perception in the market as a recruiter. And people get to know me as the podcast guy. And then I'd be like, oh yeah, and I work for Bottle Rocket, that kind of thing. I use it as a mechanism to create value for Bottle Rocket.
And I mean, it worked out so well. Like he had, you know, they let him use office space. Have you ever seen anyone, and I'm not asking for examples, but maybe who didn't use it as well or anything to be concerned about if you're building your own brand while working for a company?
Yeah, I saw one guy on LinkedIn. I forgot his name, but he was terminated by creating content. It was because it wasn't either congruent with the message of the company or if it wasn't congruent with, I don't know, whatever. But yeah, I've just seen at least one case. And if one case happens, yeah, I think it could go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I definitely saw some risk in it. And I think you have to exercise sound judgment when it comes to doing that stuff.
I like the openly just having that conversation to say, this is, I'm the voice. I know I've got your company listed on my employment. And I want to be very cognizant of what I'm saying in association with that company.
But I've also seen it like work out tremendously well. Like I had, I interviewed a head of talent acquisition and brand employer branding at Zoe's Kitchen. Mm-hmm. And that's like a big part of their LinkedIn game is having their people post about their experiences in the stores and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's their employer branding game.
Yeah. Well, even how we got introduced was through Tomas.
Yeah.
Who Plains Capital. I mean, he works for a bank and he does a lot of various different posts that have nothing to do with a bank.
Yeah.
And it's the branding and he's doing it very well too.
100%. And everyone knows him. He's like a community leader now. He's got his own podcast. Well, I love Tomas.
But you can also see Tomas like 10 miles away
too. Yeah, I know. You can't miss the guy, right?
You really can't. I've tried.
So you don't know who Tomas, he's seven feet tall,
he's
right?
7 feet tall. Yeah.
Yeah. No, literally, I feel like he has to like bend at the waist to talk to me. But on that note though, with podcasting, because we are a consulting podcasting business for corporations.
You're okay. You're good.
I'm trying to kiss this microphone, apparently. So my apologies, everybody.
Yeah.
You chose the medium of podcasting for your platform.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about that medium that attracted to you? Because you could have gone all the directions.
I tried to start a YouTube channel at first. I actually sourced a professional production company to do my first video because I wanted to do it really well and start off with a bang, right? But when it came time for me doing my own video, dude, I had entire episodes shut off with a mic. I shot entire episodes without any focus on it. It was too much of a lift. That's why I wanted something that was simple and that was easy, that I could replicate over time, that was very high quality, and podcasting was the next medium for me. And becoming a content creator quite literally changed my life in very public and verifiable ways.
Excellent. So yet again, well, I mean, I think what you have a point though is if you are going to be an employee of a corporation and you are branding yourself, you must have an agenda that is going to be either completely separate, that is non-competitive, that will not be a detriment to the brand, or you're going to improve the brand in some capacity and highlight them. And obviously Bottle Rocket, amazing place to work because you've got Julian as the face of like, hey, I love it here. Mm-hmm. And let me talk to you about things to be more successful. That, I think, I mean, Bottle Rocket scored as far as I'm concerned. Good job.
Thanks. Yeah. I appreciate it. Yeah.
I think people need to think about that because we've seen a lot of folks start podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting a business-oriented podcast, which is great, but then they stop or they fail for whatever reason. Either A, they get fired and so they oopsie, or they just can't seem to create a content or stream that is going to be of interest of value to the audience.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's, again, with what you're doing, that's what, you know, we were so excited to talk to you about because A, I really did want to talk to someone about ageism. Mm-hmm. I'm over it, people. Maybe I'm not bitter or anything, but also your background too. I mean, you're such a compliment to what we're doing. So,
So with that, Julian, thank you so much for coming today.
Yeah, this is fun.
If somebody wanted to connect with you, find you, hire you, where can they go?
You can just check me out at julianplacino.com. That's JULIANPLACINO.com. I'm also the only Julian Placino that's ever existed, so you can search for me on any channel and I'll come up. I'm primarily very engaged on LinkedIn.
I need a name like that. I changed it, but Aaron Smith is not the only Aaron Smith out there. You're pretty close though too. But anyway, Julian, thank you so much. See you any last
No, Julian, here? Pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, nice to meet you.
And of course, all of his information will be on our notes page over at innovationcalling.com. So thank you as always so much for listening and we'll see you on our next episode.